It's 5 o'clock on Friday afternoon. My name's Jacob.
Well, I must be Mercedes then. And we're on Community Radio 3CR with Friday Rave. Oh, right. Every time I hear that intro music, I mean, geez, I go back to listen to Billy back in the 70s.
Oh, yeah.
But hey, yeah. Yeah, Dare to Struggle, Dare to Win. You heard the Concrete Gang, 50-year anniversary.
Very much so. And there's, of course, 3CRs alongside the Concrete Gang. We've been there since the beginning. Is 3CR's 50th anniversary.
3CR, what are you doing tomorrow?
Oh, I reckon I might be down at the Collingwood Town Hall, you know, running around for a bit, putting up some pictures and posters and having some chats with lots of people who have been part of 3CR over the last 50 years. What are you doing?
Yeah, well, I think I might do the same. I'm actually, unlike yourself, who's been running around like a blue-ass fly helping to set the thing up, my job's easy. I've just got to MC part of it in the afternoon.
Oh, well, that's going to be hard. You hate talking.
Oh, yeah. Jeez, I don't know what I'm... I just can't find words, can I?
No, that's right, folks. So tomorrow is the big celebration for 3CR's 50 years. And there's going to be... I was actually just going through some old archived newspaper articles from... and there's some of them will be on display tomorrow from a newspaper article from when 3CR got its license back in 1976.
Whoa.
So there'll be a bunch of stuff. So, yeah, from 11 a.m. at the Collingwood Town Hall, there's going to be food and music and a lot of work's gone into it and lots of good people and chats. There's going to be opportunities to record interviews if you catch up with someone or a little message.
Yeah, there's going to be a portable recording booth there upstairs where you can just get up and do your own sort of show.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And it'll be recorded. So make sure to come on down. It goes from 11 till 4, and we hope to see you all there tomorrow.
Not only do we hope to see you there, we hope to see your money there because we need to sell some merch. And we've got a whole lot of stuff on sale as a silent auction. And we've got lucky door prizes from all kinds of people. It's too long to list. If I try to list them, I'll leave one out, and the one I'll leave out will be the only bloody person who's listened to me. So I won't list any of them. But come along tomorrow, say good day to us, and be part of the community.
That's right, that's right. And, of course, it's now clicked over to July, but you can still got time to donate for Radiothon.
Yep.
So, yeah, we'll see you tomorrow. Come get some merch, come see some good folks and eat some yum food.
But today, what have we got? What
today,
have we got?
So this week, Jacob, you and I, we caught up with Rowan Araf from the Australian Centre for International Justice. Mm-hmm. And listeners... might remember we spoke about it a couple of weeks ago, and I think I'll give the intro, but maybe we'll play that in this interview because there's been some developments on the case against Defence Minister Richard Marles.
Well, I hope we play that interview, otherwise it would have been a waste of time recording it, and I've got nothing else to say.
Neither do I. So we might just get straight into that and have a chat afterwards. So this is an interview with Rowan Araf from the Australian Centre for International Justice.
And you're tuned to a Friday Rave on Community Radio 3CR. Now, a few weeks ago, we did mention that Jacob and I were both going to go into a federal court case that got adjourned, which was a case that has been brought forward by Al-Haq, the Palestinian Centre for Human Rights and Al-Mazan Centre for Human Rights, with support from the Australian Centre for International Justice, to the federal court against the Minister of Defence to release documents pertaining to F-35 exports and exports to Israel during the genocide. And we're now joined by Rowan Araf, who is the principal lawyer and executive director of the Australian Centre for International Justice, to give us an update on where those proceedings are at. Thanks for joining us on a Friday Rave.
Thank you so much.
Now, Rowan, was the 25th of June. There was an agreement made in the federal court in regards pertaining to this case. And can you give us a little bit of an update, I guess, on what this case was trying to bring to the light, I guess, in regards to arms exports to Israel?
Yeah, so it's been a very long process to get to the position that we are in, and it's by no means over. So what we achieved on Friday, the 25th of June, was an order made by the Federal Court of Australia by consent of the parties to provide, where the minister was ordered to provide a list of documents related to arms exports to Israel. We began this process in several phases, actually, shortly after Israel's genocidal assault on Gaza in October 2023. We first issued proceedings on behalf of our client, Al-Haq, the Palestinian Centre for Human Rights and Al-Mizan Centre for Human Rights. I'm just going to call them the organisations or the groups for the purpose of this call, of this interview. We first sought export permits or documents related to export permits in November 2023. And the questions we asked at that stage was for the minister to provide our clients with the export permits issued since the 7th of October. And at that time, there were no permits issued unless they were for Australian sovereign defence capability. I mean, a lot has happened in the last 2 years, so that's, you know, changed even by admission of the government. But we thought that our questions were not, should be expanded. And we looked at what Al-Haq in the UK, together with GLAN, the Global Legal Action Network, were doing in the UK proceedings and filings that they issued there. And they were looking at the issue of active or current or extant permits. And we thought that that was something that the Australian government also needed to be more transparent about. Because as you both know, issues in relation to transparency is the biggest stumbling block for us. I mean, we know, or we have very reasonable grounds to believe that there are exports going, not just in relation to F-35, but other weapons or weapons parts or components. And so our biggest problem is always the lack of the transparency and the real secrecy in relation to Australia's arms exports regime.
Yeah, most
which is the worst in the world. So you know, over a 2 year process, we directed in good faith negotiations with defence to try and seek access to those outside of a court process. But, you know, we didn't get much. Our clients didn't receive much. So we filed in April this year to seek access to a range of categories of documents relating to extant permits, relating to the review that the government began in June 2024, which we believe our direct application to defence in April 2024 brought about that process, together with the broad movement around this country for better transparency and the end of the arms trade, the two-way arms trade and exports to Israel. So we think that brought about the review. Sorry, go ahead, Jake.
Yeah, sorry, I was just going to say, Rowan, it's you come back to the transparency, and I think that's an important thing. Well, we have our foreign minister being able to look down the barrel of a camera and say that we did not sell arms, or we did not sell this, or we don't deal with Israel.
Yeah.
We have, I mean, some people are looking at the United States right now with shock horror because of Donald Trump, and so they should. But I just want to say, half the information we can get about Australian arms exports and Australian companies involved in manufacturing this equipment come from papers delivered to Congress.
Yes,
that we get access online about Australia and about Australian companies that we can't even get in Australia. How can we address that transparency when you're looking at things like arms exports?
I mean, I think that's a really great question, and it really requires broad range public support for greater transparency. It shouldn't need three Palestinian human rights organizations, all of whom are under the pump, all of whom have colleagues and family in Gaza and the West Bank, obviously, under the pump, all of them who are sanctioned organizations by the US, obviously illegitimately sanctioned for doing work related to the pursuit of international justice at the International Criminal Court. It shouldn't require going to court by these three organizations to reveal just the export permits and the decisions around those permits or the decisions not to revoke certain permits, etc. These clients should not, these organizations should not be required to go through the lengthy and very risky process of a court and litigation process to access these documents. And I should say it was only through making that application in court that we were able to receive this order, because like I said, we engaged in direct good faith communications with the Defense Department over a two-year period and we got absolutely nothing. And so it was only through this process that our clients were able to get the information necessary. And I should state that the information that we will receive on the 17th of July, and it won't be made public, it will just come to us as the legal representatives and to the clients, is at this stage just a list of documents, because it's likely that the minister may claim that certain documents should not be released on public interest immunity grounds. And of course, we maintain that transparency relating to grave crimes is in the public interest. And so I think that this is when I was saying earlier that the battle is not yet over and there's still a real cloud of secrecy around Australia's arms export regime. And so back to your early question, Jacob, I do think that there needs to be a major overhaul. I was interested in what you were saying earlier when we met in Melbourne a month ago, that there used to be greater transparency many decades ago. So it seems like governments, successive governments, you know, whether Labor or led by the coalition over decades has somehow become quite secretive in relation to arms exports for no valid reason. I mean, why is it that the US, as you say, Congress can reveal so much information? If you go, they publish press releases, I think, where they state the manufacturer, the amount, the dollar amount of the trade itself, the actual weapon and or parts that are being traded and to what country or what company those exports are going to. So why is it that the US has no issues in releasing that information, but somehow Australian governments are concerned about national security, national security or commercial inconfidence? I mean, it just doesn't sit well that you have the US not having these concerns, or US companies, you know, not raising these concerns, but for some reason in Australia, it's an issue. I don't know if you have a reason or an answer for that, Jacob, but certainly I can't find a valid reason for it.
I think it comes down to Australia's role as a sub-imperial power to the United States. Mm. The boss can do and say whatever the boss wants to do and say, but we have to be a little bit more circumspect.
Mm. And Rowan, I want to go back to, the government did announce, and as you said, probably in response to kind of pushing for these documents, that they were undertaking a review of export permits. The outcomes of that review, to my knowledge, yet unknown. And I guess there's this kind of where there's appearance to be acting in a transparent manner when the reality is not so. We also have things like the Defence Export Control Summary, which, for the financial year, the third quarter of the 24-25 financial year, says that there's Defence and Strategic Goods List Part 1, which is the munitions part, which regular listeners to A Friday Rave will know. But there are, in the issued permits, there are 10 to Israel from the period of the 1st of January to the 31st of March 2025. Now, what they are, we don't know, but, there's this kind of appearance of some form of transparency, but once you get into it, the actual permits, or we know that the Australian government issues permits, kind of just drops the hammer on them like no tomorrow. But doesn't actually have any mechanism to gauge or to record whether those permits are actually followed through with. And this is another part of the issue of transparency. It says specifically that it does not record or gather information on actual exports, which just seems absolutely bizarre, particularly in this in this instance. So getting back to the list of documents that will be coming, so just for listeners, this will be in relation to the export of F-35 components from the Defence and Strategic Goods list. It'll also be in any permission held by the Bisalloy Steel Group, which listeners will be aware that the Wollongong, the Friends of Palestine and Wollongong crew have been held a lot of successful pickets there.
Bisalloy, I've got, sorry, can I just step in there and say Bisalloy make a specific armour plate that is specifically made for Israeli tanks that are specifically made to trample over Palestinian villages.
Yes, that's right. And permission specifics of end user being Rafael Defence Systems, which is Israel's third largest weapons manufacturer, and Plasan Riem or Plasan Sasa, which actually in March of 2023 opened an Australian subsidiary because they're going to be working alongside Hanwha Defence on making the the Hanwha are making a infantry fighting vehicle, the Redback infantry fighting vehicle down in Avalon. So this is that two-way arms trade of kind of going, okay, there's there's obviously a relationship. I know that there were Australian Army infantry fighting vehicles that were tested by Plasan in Israel. And so this is a two-way arms trade. But I guess in relationship, in relation to the documents that, or the list of documents that will be coming out of what the next steps will be or to try and gain that transparency. Is it specific to exports, but is it a is the hope to try and bring about, you know, more transparency on that two-way trade?
No, because if you read the order, it specifically excludes any permissions related to Australian sovereign defence capability.
Yes,
so,
it does,
yeah, specifically for our purposes in this application relating to exports, it's not going to be those permissions related to ADF capability is just not relevant to the issue of exports, even though, of course, as you say, it's a concern about the two-way arms trade, which Australia should not be engaging in because supporting in any way by business or contracts and trade with these Israeli arms manufacturers does end up sustaining the illegal occupation. And the International Court of Justice advisory opinion is clear that you should not aid and abet any situation, you should not aid and abet anything that gives rise to the illegal situation, which is the illegal military occupation. So we would, of course, say that that trade relationship must end. There's no way that you can argue that trade with Israeli military companies does not support the military occupation. These companies are vital for the military occupation. But unfortunately, for the purposes of this specific application, those permissions are not relevant.
Yeah, but I mean, what is incredibly relevant is the Australian government that has rubber stamped or continued export permits during a genocide, which makes the Australian government complicit and everyone that the Australian government claims to be acting on behalf of.
That's right. And look, I think, I think the government, is concerned about responsibility, criminal liability and their obligations more broadly because they did engage in this review. The concern is that the review has taken absolutely way too long. There is no information that defence puts to the public about that review. It's only through Senate estimates that we know anything about that review. Certainly there's been no correspondence to our clients, in relation to that review. But you can see in the categories of the list of documents that our clients were successful in obtaining that they will receive is that that review seems to be ongoing because it's or hasn't ended rather because I think the third category of documents is decisions not to revoke current permissions that were granted before October 2023. So it appears that the review has not yet completed, which is a concern. Why is it taking so long to conduct a review into such a into compared to the UK, for example, the Starmer government, when it came to power, they reviewed 350 permissions in the period of 2 months. The Australian government, by contrast, is taking over 2 years, or nearly 2 years, to conduct review of what initially the number was 66 when it came out in the June Senate estimates in 2024. That's 2 years ago now.
Well, in Australia, I'm afraid the official, the unofficial line, but the real line seems to be with this government, as well as previous ones, that if you want to kill an issue, send it to a committee and start a review. That's happened on so many issues in this government. They just go to review, they go to committee, and that's the last. Not only are we do we see them, but in some cases, the last we're allowed to talk about them.
You know, this is part of the purpose of this application brought by our clients, is that we, you know, we cannot take the government's statements at face value if we're not allowed to scrutinize them. And if you're claiming you're undertaking a review and, you know, as they've stated, some numbers have amended, or, you know, in terms of the export permits that they reviewed, some have amended or lapsed, and others, you know, they have cancelled, or, you know, they use a different term for it, revoke, and others they've maintained. Why? We have a right to know. Certainly our clients have a right to know. So the Australian public have a right to know about how they're conducting these assessments into those current permissions that they maintained. And we want to make sure that they're doing them according to law. And this is the whole purpose of the discovery application, is we want to... we have a right, our clients have a right to scrutinise those decisions to ensure that the minister or his delegates undertook those assessments according to law. And if we believe that they did not, then that's the basis of the client's substantive appeal, which is a judicial review application of those decisions. But without having the access to that information, our clients can't make that application, because we just don't have the information. And hopefully, with the next step, you asked about it, Mercedes, at the beginning, what's the next step, is to receive that list of documents, and then we'll be able to, I suppose, look at what documents we then want to further make claims to access. And if the government makes claims in relation to public interest immunity on any of those documents, then we'll have to have that battle with the minister once again. So that's, I understand, the process in the next steps.
Well, we look forward to hearing the outcome of the court case on the 17th of this month.
It's not actually a court case. It's on the 17th. The order is that the minister provides us with a list of documents on the 17th of July. I understand at that point, our legal team and the clients will look at those documents, that list, and take it from there. So there may well be future court applications. We just don't know and can't say at this stage. It just depends on what we receive from the minister.
Well, let me rephrase that and say we look forward to seeing what documents are released to you on the 17th of July.
It's unlikely that we'll be able to provide that information publicly. We'll probably be subject to confidentiality, in relation to those, and that's okay. But we, you know, we'll endeavour to update where we can. And, if the next stage is another court application, you'll definitely hear from our clients in relation to that.
Yeah, very much so. And I think, it's really important to keep on them, because, I mean, this review that they announced and then there's been no outcomes, it either speaks to absolute secrecy in the Australian government in regards to defence, but also I think it does speak more broadly to the kind of free-for-all export regime, of why is it taking so long? And these are the questions that what shields of layers of opaqueness that the government are hiding behind. Thank you so much for joining us, Rowan, and we do look forward to hearing any updates after the 17th of July.
Thank you. And thank you to you both for continuing to make this an issue and to talk about it, because I think it's very necessary. And I do think that the vast majority of the Australian public are aggrieved and concerned about this issue. And it's because of community and independent media that continues to highlight it and discuss it that we are really appreciative of everything that you guys have been doing to make this to make sure that this doesn't go away.
Yeah, and you also, and the organisations that you're working with.
Thank you. Thanks, Rowan.
And that there was Rowan Araf from the Australian Centre for International Justice, who are awaiting on a list of documents by federal court order from the Minister for Defence, Richard Marles, on exports, a series of documents of exports to Israel. And we will put the link to those court documents up when we podcast the episode.
Yeah, absolutely. That's getting close to all we've got time for today, mate.
It is getting close to all we've got time for. And, yeah, big thanks to Rowan for coming on the program. We'll be following it because, I mean, interestingly, I had a look to see whether, you know, there was the Australian Centre for International Justice put out a press release, but in the initial kind of hearing in April, it was covered in mainstream. But I think what Rowan said about community and independent media being the ones to cover this is because the outcome of it has not been reported on anywhere. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's why it's in.
And we've got to also say that when they first started talking about this, you know, you and I both spoke to them about some of the knowledge we had.
Yes.
So, you know. Yeah.
Exactly. It's been a long process, but we're almost out of time and Slacker Radio is up next. For the next few weeks, we're quite organised on a Friday rave this time.
Normally, shocking, isn't it?
I know. But we will be talking to Tom Solston from Digital Rights Watch next week.
About data centres and shit.
About data centres. And in the interim between the fortnight after that, Pat Conroy just released his, what do you call it, progressive patriotism.
Look, I'll tell you what.
I shouldn't have said that word with a minute and a half left, should I?
We'll tell you all about it in 2 weeks' time. It is the most disgusting document I have read from an Australian minister. And I am putting Tony Abbott there. I'm putting Dickie Miles there. It is absolutely, it should be put up against, no, I can't say that.
Can't say that, but we'll put him up on the tally and watch it so you don't have to, folks, and we'll talk about it all in the next in 2 weeks' time. But in the meantime, Slacker Radio's up next. We will see you all at the 50th tomorrow.
See you tomorrow. Come and say hi.
Come and say hi. And
Slacker Radio at the door. Come in.
Yeah,
say hi.
Come in and, well, we've got a couple of minutes left. Hello, hello, Tilda.
Oh, hi. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Yeah, not bad. Just pulling up a pew.
Yeah, what do you got on today?
We're talking about our good friends over at the Victorian Liberal Party, continuing to cover themselves in glory. talking about
cannibalise each other.
Recurring character Moira Deeming.
I mean, look, they do a lot of nasty stuff, but you know what I really dislike about them?
Headlocks.
They almost make the Labor Party look good.
Classic.
Classic. All right, we're going to skip to a couple of carts. Beyond the Bars is next week here on Community Radio 3CR as well, so make sure to tune in next week. We'll see you tomorrow at the party.